So dreaming can be hard, and we're going to see that tonight. Will you guys open up with me? We're in Genesis chapter 37, verses 1 to 36. We're looking at Genesis 37, and we're looking at the story of Joseph as we start a new series, and our series is called Big Choices and Little Moments, because we're going to see a couple different people in Scripture over the next few weeks together who make these huge choices that they didn't know were big choices. Like, in the moment, it seemed like a really small moment, and maybe even insignificant. Like, this really doesn't matter what I choose right now. But every single time, that little teeny moment turned into this massive, world-changing choice that they had made. And God shows up every time in the middle of it. And so we're going to look at tonight, we're starting with Joseph, and we're in Genesis 37. And as you guys open there or look on the screens, if that's what you need to do tonight, that's fine too. I just want to share with you a time where I had a dream, okay? When I was in fourth grade, I dreamed of being the president of my class. How many of y'all have like served as like in student council or president of your class? All right, legit, there's a lot of people, sweet. So I was in fourth grade in this little Christian school, and all I wanted was to be president of my class. My teacher, Miss Howell, was so awesome. She had this red Mazda that it was like convertible. It wasn't a muscle car, but it was a red convertible. And every year, all of the like first, second, and third graders knew that if you became president in fourth grade, Miss Howell let you stand in the back of her like her convertible, her red Mazda, and she would drive you around the parking lot, and your class would kind of like think about it. It was really weird. But I wanted to do it so bad. So I wanted to be president, but I also wanted to be a leader in my class. I was in a class where, you know, I wasn't very popular. There were other more popular people that kind of led the class. And I wanted to really be a leader. And I wanted to point people to Jesus. And that was really important to me. But as I looked around me at the competition for president, I kind of felt hopeless. I was like, dude, I am not the coolest kid in this class. As a matter of fact, the kid who ran against me, his name was Ricky. And Ricky was the coolest dude. He was better looking. He was a better athlete. He was hilarious. Everybody laughed at him. Like, this dude was just awesome. And I was like, there's no way I'm beating Ricky. And I tried, you know, I ran for president a little bit, and Ricky was kicking my butt. And one day I overheard some classmates making fun of me. And they were like, why would he ever think he could beat Ricky? And they said some hurtful things. And I just sat there thinking, man, they think so little of me. There's no way I'm ever going to win. I need to like stoop to some low levels. So I went home and I bought this big poster board and I got grape soda can, right? I drank the grape soda and I glued it to the poster board. And then I took like a purple marker and I made like as if it was spilling out. And then I took a picture of Ricky and I glued it right there and put the soda all over him. And here was my slogan. If you vote for Ricky, you'll end up all sticky. Oh, dude, right? Thank you. I know how to play the game, right? I know how to play the game. So I bring this poster to school the next morning, and I'm about to hang it up in the hallway outside my class before anybody's there, because I don't want them to see me. It's too embarrassing. So I go to start hanging up, and the teacher walks out of the classroom. And I'm like, ah! You know, like, and she looks at it, and she's like, come talk to me. And I'm like, uh-oh. You know, it's one of those. So I get brought in the classroom, and Mrs. Howell sits me down, and she's like, you know, why would you make something like that? And I'm like, well, I know I'm going to lose. And she just looked at me with a sad look for a second, like, how do you know that? And I was like, because Ricky's way cooler. He has all the friends. He's super popular. There's no way they're going to vote for me. And she said, you know, instead of doing something like this and try to bring him down, make him look worse, if you really want this and you really think God's calling you to do this, she said, get on your knees and pray. She said something else after that. She said, nobody can stop God if it's his will. And I sat there and I'm thinking, man, I'm trying to do this myself. I'm trying to do whatever I can. I'm going to launch a smear campaign with grape soda, like over this kid. And like, all I had to really do was trust that God will come through if it's actually his will. And her advice stuck with me till today, from fourth grade till today. I'm standing in front of you as a grown adult. I can still hear those words. If God really is in it, you can't stop it. So kneel down and pray. And so as we're talking about dreams tonight, I want to encourage you, whatever your dream might be, whatever thing God has been calling you or saying to you, if it's really God, there's no stopping him. So just get on your knees and pray. You don't have to try to do it yourself or conjure up the energy or be really skilled in whatever area it is. You don't have to worry because God can't be stopped if it's his will. And so the best place for you to be is on your knees before him, just praying and trusting that God will come through. How many of you guys would say tonight, like, you have a dream. There's something inside of you that you're like, man, there's something I got to do. Like, any of you guys, there's a few of you out there that already got dreams. It's a lot of you. That's awesome. If God's in your dream, you can't stop him. Get on your knees and pray. Are you praying about that dream? Are you asking the Lord, are you in this? Is this your voice calling me to do this, or is this me? And give that dream over to him, because if he's in it, he can't be stopped. And we're going to see that tonight. So we're in Genesis 37. I'm going to start off reading a little bit, and we'll talk about each section. The first part says this. Jacob lived in the land of his father's sojournings, in the land of Canaan. These are the generations of Jacob. Joseph, his son, being 17 years old. How many of y'all are 17? All right, there's a few of you guys, and the rest of you are on your way. Some of you are older. Whew, old farts. Okay. 17 years old, was pasturing the flock with his brothers. So he's a shepherd. He was a boy with the sons of Bilhah and Zilpah, his father's wives. So he has two stepmoms, okay, and stepbrothers. And Joseph brought a bad report of them to their father. Are you that younger brother who's always like telling on your older brothers and sisters or younger sister, right? Yikes. Okay, so that's never good news. And he does that. And listen what happens. Now Israel loved Joseph, Israel's his dad, more than any other of his sons, because he was the son of his old age. And he made him a robe of many colors. But when his brothers saw that their father loved him more than all his brothers, they hated him and could not speak peacefully to him. All right, let's pause there for 1 second. Joseph, as we encounter him and get to know him right now, he's already in a bad situation. The dude's got a bad family life, right? I mean, his dad loves him, but everyone else in the family pretty much hates him. All of his brothers, all these other moms that his dad's married to, because back then it was weird, right? And so, like, he's just in the middle of this thing where it says they literally hate him. They can't even say anything nice to him. Like, you wake up in the morning, go for your cup of coffee, and people are already just, like, all over. Like, you can't do anything. You can't move around your own home because people are just constantly so mean to you. Like, some of us probably know what that feels like. Odds are there are people in this room that can be like, I'm into that. Like, that stinks. My life is kind of like that. My family is kind of like that. Or my friend group is kind of toxic like that. I'm used to being around a group of people that just act like they hate me. They just can't seem to say anything nice to me. That's a bad spot to be. That's not glamorous. That's not like Insta-famous right there where everybody loves you and comments and put little hearts on your posts and stuff. Like, this is like constant just talking trash to you all the time. And that gets old. And so here's some 17-year-old dude who's your age, and he's surrounded by a family that's constantly just being mean to him. And when you think of like a hero, this isn't what you picture. You know, this isn't the heroic beginning of this awesome comic movie, you know? Like, this is just, man, that just sounds like blah, everyday life. This sounds so horrible. Who would want to live like that? And here's Joseph already in this really bad situation. And look what it says next. Now Joseph had a dream. When he told it to his brothers, they hated him even more. Like, bad idea, right? He said to them, "Hear this dream that I have dreamed. Behold, we were binding sheaves in the field, and behold, my sheaf arose and stood upright. And behold, your sheaves gathered around it and bowed down to my sheaf." His brothers said to him, "Are you indeed to reign over us? Are you indeed to rule over us?" So they hated him even more for his dreams and for his words. Then he dreamed another dream and told it to his brothers and said, "Behold, I've dreamed another dream." You'd think he'd stop after the first one, right? Like, you didn't get the point, bro? Like, he goes back to him, "Guess what else I dreamed?" You know? He is kind of annoying, right? He's a little bit annoying. So he comes back and he says, "Behold, the sun, the moon, and the 11 stars were bowing down to me." But when he told it to his father and to his brothers, his father rebuked him and said to him, "What is this dream that you've dreamed? Shall I and your mother and brothers indeed come to bow ourselves to the ground before you?" And his brothers were jealous of him, but his father kept the saying in his mind. Now listen, this sounds like a pretty cocky dream. Like, you don't walk up to somebody and you're like, "Hey, I dream that you're all going to bow down to me." Like, they already hate you, bro. Like, what are you thinking? Why are you sharing this dream with them? And then you do it twice. So it's growing. This hatred is growing in their hearts and this jealousy is growing. But you know what? It's true. Like, God actually gave him these dreams. One day these people really will, and we'll see it in a couple weeks. They really will bow before him. And this wasn't a prideful kid coming up and being like, "Ha ha, you guys are going to bow down." He's just sharing what God did in his heart, and it was misunderstood. He had this dream that was actually from the Lord. It was the Lord's voice. And in his innocence of sharing it, thinking, "Man, I'm just following Jesus," people misunderstood his dream and they immediately hated him for it. "Man, you're so prideful. You think so much of yourself. Why do you always put us down?" When really he's the one that's just there and they can't even say a good word to him. Now listen, when God gives you dreams, people are going to misunderstand your dreams. They might not always know that it's from the Lord. They might not always hear the voice of God speaking to you. That's you hearing it. And so you're going to take some flack for dreaming for Jesus. It's not for people who are timid. And it's good that God gives you this courage to say yes. Because it can be hard to dream. It can be hard to hear what people will say to you and how they're going to want to put you down and how they're going to want to come at you and be like, "Are you sure that's from the Lord? Why would God speak to you? Why would you do this?" See, the world's always going to want to take that dream from you that God's given to you. Joseph is standing in this moment that is not at all glamorous. It's a small moment. It's this small situation that is humble and modest and just kind of stinks. I don't think Joseph in this moment knew that one day he would become what those dreams were telling him. I wonder if he even believed or understood what it was that God was really telling him was going to happen. But it was going to happen as exactly as God said. You know why? Because when God's in it, he can't be stopped. No matter what they say to you, no matter what the haters want to say, no matter how they want to tell you that your dream is just pointless and that you're this or you're that, you got to stop and say, "Lord, if you're in this, you can't be stopped. And I'm going to trust you." And the best thing you can do, like my teacher told me, get on your knees and pray. "God, do this." You just heard Dream Team share some huge dreams. I don't know if you recognize just how big those things are that they said. You're probably just used to hearing them. It's church. We say those things, right? But from people that mean it from the bottom of their heart, that they want to see you love Jesus more, that they want to grow to know Jesus more, that they want our schools and communities to know the name of Jesus and be saved. Those are huge things that you can't do. I can't do those things. But if God's in them, can't stop them. And so as we look at Joseph, we see like the place we belong is on our knees. Asking God, "Do this through me." We are in a small moment. This is humble. We're looking around us going, "What do I have to offer you, Lord?" But a big choice can be made, and God can do some really big things if you trust him. Sometimes it's hard to dream big when your current situation is really small. It's hard to dream big. Don't let your talents, don't let what people tell you, don't let like where you're at or how much money you have or what, like, you name it. Don't let anything else tell you how big you can dream. You hear the voice of the Lord, and you take that, and you say, "God, if you said it, you'll do it. I'm going to say yes." And you pray. Next it says, "Now his brothers went to pasture their father's flock near Shechem. They took the sheep out. And Israel said to Joseph, 'Are not your brothers pasturing the flock at Shechem? Come, I will send you to them.'" Ugh. Like, you feel it? Oh man, what? "Dad, seriously, you want me to go to those turds? Like, they're always mean to me. Now I got to go without you there to protect me, and I got to go way out here. And, like, I don't care how they're doing." You know, like, that's probably how I would feel. I don't know how Joseph felt. All I know is what he said. Immediately he responds, "Here I am. Whatever you say, Dad, I'm ready to go." Whew. Man, that's a small moment. Doesn't seem like much. But the next time God turns to you, your heavenly Father says, hey, I want you to go do this thing, and you're not going to want to. This thing that is going to be miserable for you, this thing that you're looking at going, really, Lord, you're asking me to do that? I don't want to go to them. Those people are always mean to me. Will your response just be, here I am? Your response will be, okay, God, you know what you're doing. If you're in it, you can't be stopped. So yeah, here I am, God, I'll go. I don't want to. That situation seems terrible. Where you're asking me to go, where you're sending me right now, I'm scared out of my mind. I don't want to do that. But God, if you're saying it, like Joseph said to his dad, I'm going to say to you, Father, here I am. I'll go because I trust you. Not because I'm great, not because I'm strong, not because they're nice, because you are good. And I know that, and I'll trust it. I can imagine that was the last thing Joseph was wanting to do, was go serve his brothers who were always so mean to him. But yet he submits to his dad and he obeys when it's hard. And then he says this. It says this, a man found him wandering in the fields. So he's looking around for his brothers. And the man asked him, what are you seeking? I'm seeking my brothers, he said. Tell me, please, where they are pasturing the flock. And the man said, they've gone away, for I heard them say, let us go to Dothan. So Joseph went after his brothers and found them at Dothan. They saw him from afar, and before he came near to them, they conspired against him to kill him. Things got like crazy real fast, right? Like real fast. They said to one another, here comes this dreamer. They saw a dreamer, and they said, let's put him to death. Man, come now, let us kill him and throw him into one of the pits. Then we'll say that a fierce animal has devoured him, and we'll see what will become of his dreams. But when Reuben heard it, he rescued him out of their hands, saying, let us not take his life. Let's stop there for just a second. You realize what's happening? His own flesh and blood. Like his own brothers see him coming across the field to serve them. Like coming for their good, obeying his father with their interest in mind. And what do they say? This dude who thinks he's better than us, this dreamer who's going to be our prince, our king. Let's kill him. Throw him in a pit. We'll say some animal ripped him up on his way out here alone. That's what we'll tell our dad. Can you imagine that? Their little brother, their baby brother. And that was their thought. That was the hatred in their heart for him. Man, did you hear that one phrase? Here comes this dreamer. Think it's going to be any different for us when God puts a big dream in your mind that goes against what this world thinks is right or wrong? What this world wants? When God calls you to stand up for his kingdom and do the right thing, and that's this big dream he's put in you, and the world hates it and says, let's take care of this dreamer. Let's shut him up real quick. Let's tell her where she can go. Let's stop this dream in its tracks and discourage them. So I want to tell you, there's going to be conflict in your life if you decide to obey God with big dreams. There will be opposition that comes, and there will be challenges, and the world's going to hate it, but you don't have to stop. Because remember, if God's in it, he can't be stopped. Get on your knees and pray. This was a big, big decision in a real small moment. His dad was just like, hey, go do this thing. Just go check on your brothers. It didn't seem glorious. It wasn't David running out on the battlefield against a giant. You know, it wasn't this big heroic moment. But what a hero. What a hero in a humble, dusty, dirty road where nobody was watching or patting him on the back for doing the right thing, where he got no glory for it. He just said yes and obeyed. That's a big, big decision to make in a really humble, small moment. Y'all, if you're waiting for this huge thing to happen where you're going to all of a sudden serve Jesus and do something great with your life, you're missing a lot of moments along the way where God wants to use you. Because more often than not, it's in those small, humble moments that you might not even recognize. Those moments where you're just consistent, where you just say yes to Jesus in the humble times, in the small moments. That big, big world-changing things happen. This decision changed the course of the world. we today are affected by the decision that he made. And you'll see that throughout the rest of Scripture. This was a massive decision in a very small moment, saying, yes, I'll obey. The enemy always wants to kill the dream that God's given you. You need to know that. Satan's always coming after your dream. The thing that God's looking for your life, his plan, Satan's always trying to convince you not to believe it. He's always coming after your dream. So you hold on to that and you say, God, if you're in this, you can't be stopped. And look at how God can't be stopped. This guy named Reuben, one of his brothers steps up and says, shed no blood. These guys are going to kill this kid. Like, they are going to tear him apart and enjoy it, probably, is what it sounds like. They're some messed up dudes. But Reuben is like, no, shed no blood. Throw him into this pit here in the wilderness, but don't lay a hand on him. And he did it that he might rescue him. So, like, his plan was that he was going to help his brother. Just throw him in the pit. Don't actually kill him. And then later, Reuben was going to sneak around and save him, right? So when Joseph came to his brothers, they stripped him of his robe. They hated that robe because it showed how much their dad loved him over them. The robe of many colors that he wore. And they took him and threw him into the pit. The pit was empty. There was no water in it. And they sat down to eat. You realize that Reuben, that was God saying, I can't be stopped. That was God's provision. It was his salvation to say, you said yes, you obeyed me, I'm honoring that. We're not stopping this thing. This dream's going to happen. I can't be stopped. And then in one of the hearts of his brothers, God does a work and changes his heart and causes him to rescue him. God has not abandoned Joseph. Now stop for a second, because if you were sitting in that pit at this moment, when things just all of a sudden took a turn for the worse, and you're looking up like, hey guys, like, hello, you're kidding, right? You're going to let me out? And they're like, you're lucky we didn't kill you. You know, like, you're probably thinking, this does not seem like a better situation. As a matter of fact, it feels like it just got worse. They hated me, but at least I was out there walking around. Now I'm sitting in a pit. How is this God's plan? How is God making things better and looking out for me? Maybe some of you guys are in a pit tonight. Maybe some of you guys are sitting in a place where you're like, God, things just feel like they keep getting worse. And I keep praying, and then this happens. Now I go from out there, free to walk around, I'm in a pit. God, like, what are you doing? How is your plan helping me? I feel like it's getting worse. I don't know what your pit is tonight. But you do. You know that thing that you feel trapped to? That thing that you have to fight every day when you wake up? That thing that you're constantly facing, that's constantly aching in you? What's your pit tonight? What has you trapped? What's stealing your joy? Joseph sitting in the middle of it, down in this dark pit by himself, going, God, don't quit. You might be in a pit tonight, but don't give up. Because this is not the end of his story, and it's not the end of yours. You will not be stuck in this pit forever. God has a plan, and it doesn't immediately look like everything's better. That's where trust comes in. That's when you go, God, I know you can't be stopped. No matter what it looks like down here, no matter if I'm sitting in this pit or not, God, you can't be stopped. This little moment is holding a really big decision. And you know what that decision is? To keep trusting God. It's not some business decision or some strategy you'll come up with or some big choice. Here's the decision, the big one. Keep trusting God. No matter how dark or deep or dangerous your pit looks like tonight, keep trusting him. Don't give up. Keep saying yes to Jesus. Then this happens. And looking up, they saw a caravan of Ishmaelites coming from Gilead with their camels bearing gum. I always think the camels are chewing gum there. I don't know. Do you picture that? It was weird, but they weren't, I don't think. Balm and myrrh on their way to carry it to Egypt. Then Judah said to his brothers, what profit is it if we kill our brother and conceal his blood? Let us sell him to the Ishmaelites and let our hand be upon us, for he is our brother. Upon him, for he is our brother, our own flesh. And his brothers listened to him. The Midianite traders passed by, and they drew Joseph up and lifted him up out of the pit. Okay, so I'm being rescued, yay, but wait a minute. I'm being rescued into slavery. Like, I'm finally free of this pit, but it just got worse again. I'm no longer sitting in a pit. Now I'm a slave to, like, these people that are going to sell me in Egypt. How did this get better, God? I keep praying, and you keep doing worse. Should I just stop praying? Like, seriously? Because every time I pray, it just gets worse. Have you ever felt like that? You ever wondered if your prayers are working? Like, God, see me down here? Like, it just took a whole nother step of worse. But you see, that rescue tells us that God is always in control. He didn't get killed. He got spared out of the pit. And God is taking one step at a time, answering these prayers in his time, working out what he is going to do because he can't be stopped. It was a door of rescue. This pit that looked like this dangerous thing turned into a miracle. This pit turned into his rescue. And he's still alive. He still has breath in his lungs. Your pit tonight, that you might be sitting there and you're dreading it and you hate it and you're begging God, get me out of this, get me out of this. Maybe it's your rescue. Maybe it's the very thing that God's using to rescue you, to teach you something, to grow you, to work his plan. That's what it was in Joseph's life. Before you judge your pit and say, God, how could you? Maybe you say, God, thank you. This isn't something I love. This isn't something I'm enjoying. But God, I know you're working your plan, and this is part of it. This very thing that plagues me could be a miracle. It could be your rescue in my life. So don't be too quick to judge it. What you think is a curse might be a blessing. And we're talking about making big decisions in little moments, right? Thinking about Joseph's brother's decision. Imagine being those guys. Imagine having chosen to basically, or being willing to kill your little brother. And then you just sold your little brother into slavery. And you have to live with that guilt and shame for the rest of your life. Some of you guys are like, that's a great idea. I can't wait to get rid of my little brother. He's annoying, right? But like, honestly, think about it for a second. Jokes aside, like, imagine the guilt. Imagine the shame. Your own flesh and blood you should be looking out for and loving and protecting, and you were so petty. You were so jealous over this little kid. You just sold him into slavery? This was a nasty decision, and you know what? They couldn't take it back. Some of you guys tonight are like, man, I relate more to the brothers than I do to Joseph. I've already made some really, really terrible decisions. I've made some things I'm carrying around, this guilt and this shame with me, and I'm like, how could God pull me out of a pit when he knows everything I've done? I deserve the pit. We're going to see in a couple chapters the mercy and the forgiveness of God, even over these terrible dudes who sold Joseph into slavery. I want you to know tonight that no matter what you've done, God forgives. There is mercy in God's heart for you. Even these terrible dudes were forgiven and shown mercy. That guilt you're feeling, that shame you're feeling tonight because of your choice, you can't take it back, right? But God can forgive it. You can lay it before him tonight and trust that Jesus put it on the cross when he died for you, and you can trust him to forgive you. That's what these dudes had to do and will do. You'll see in a little bit, in a couple weeks. And then it says this, when Reuben returned to the pit and saw Joseph was not in the pit, he tore his clothes, returned to his brothers and said, the boy's gone. Where shall I go? Then they took Joseph's robe and slaughtered a goat and dipped the robe in the blood. And they sent the robe of many colors and brought it to their father and said, this we have found. Please identify whether it's your son's robe or not. And he identified it and said, it's my son's robe. A fierce animal has devoured him. Joseph is without doubt torn to pieces. Reuben goes back to the pit. The guy who's trying to like save him is going back to save him at the moment. He's like, he's not here. My plan backfired. And he runs to his brothers. He's like, what did you do? He's not there. How can I ever go home now? And so they come up with their original plan, right? Except they use a goat's blood instead of Joseph's blood. You see that? What does that sound like to you? Right here in the middle of this story, this blood that was sacrificed for Joseph. Joseph didn't have to die. Instead, this this lamb, this goat was slaughtered for him. We're hearing the gospel. That's the picture of what Jesus will do. This is foreshadowing that Jesus one day will die for that sin, that terrible decision and choice that you made, that you're carrying the guilt and the shame. Jesus went and said, take my blood instead of yours. That's why you can be forgiven. That's how you can be shown mercy, because Jesus' blood was sacrificed for your blood. And Joseph is this awesome example. Imagine if Joseph hadn't said yes to his father, hadn't made that big choice in the little moment. What if he had just gone off somewhere else and came back and be like, yeah, they're good, dad. And he really was out playing, like, I don't know, with his riding a go-kart or something. Then he comes back and he's like, yeah, I went. Really, I did, I swear. But he didn't. He went. He really did. He made this big choice in that terrible moment. And now this picture, this foreshadowing of Jesus and this forgiveness that his brothers will have and the salvation of his entire people group we're going to see, all because he said yes when it was hard to say yes. How many choices have you said no to because they were hard? Because they weren't comfortable, because they made you feel weird and you're really shy and you're this and you're that, and you make all these excuses to say no to God. Like he doesn't know who you are. Like he didn't knit you together in your mother's womb. He already knows your excuses. He already knows your weaknesses. He knows everything you can go, God, I can't do this because. He's like, I already know. I made you. I just want you to say yes. Joseph said yes when it was hard. Joseph said yes when it seemed impossible. Joseph said yes to the worst thing that he could imagine being asked to go do. Not because he's a great guy, but because he trusted God. So it says then, to finish, it says this. Then Jacob, his father, tore his garments. He was so sad. They tore their garments to mourn back then and put sackcloth in his loins and mourned for his son for many days. All his sons and all his daughters rose up to comfort him, but he refused to be comforted and said, no, I shall go down to Sheol to my son mourning. Thus his father wept for him. Meanwhile, the Midianites had sold him in Egypt to Potiphar, an officer of Pharaoh, the captain of the guard. Joseph gets taken to the most powerful nation on earth at the time and sold to be a slave to the second most powerful man on earth. He goes from a stinky field tending sheep to a pit, to slavery, to Egypt. And this whole time he's thinking, it's getting worse, it's getting worse, it's getting worse. And really what God's doing is working his plan. I don't know how you feel tonight about your life and what's going on. I know some of you, and I know you're hurting. I know you're in a pit. I want to encourage you. Don't be too quick to call it a pit. Maybe tonight what you're actually sitting in is God's miracle, his rescue, his forgiveness. Will you see it for that? Like my teacher told me in fourth grade, because I wanted to ride in that red Mazda so bad, right? And she sat me down and she told me, if God's in it, can't be stopped. Get on your knees and pray. Will you pray tonight? Will you bow your heads for just a second? As the band comes back up to lead us in some worship, will you just ask God that question, just as you're thinking? And in your heart, just say, Lord, what's my pit? What is the thing I'm sitting in tonight that feels impossible, that feels like I can't get out of? God, will you show me that? Will you give me the courage to give that up to you tonight?